Today's presenter is Kamarian Nathan. Kamarian was appointed to a Webster Level 2 support engineer at IBM Software in November 2002. In this capacity, he is working on the Webster System Management, Admin, Security, and Install components for more than 5 years. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Kamarian.
Thanks, Olivia. This is Kumar and Nathan, working with Sphere support for more than 5 years. So today we are going to see a lot of command line tools used in the Sphere application server 6.0 and 6.1. It's not new from 5.0 and 5.1, but I'm going to talk about a lot of debug and tips how we can use those command line tools. And we are also going to see how effective we can start and stop the servers, and how we can monitor the application server processes. So we can move on to slide 2. So this is what we are going to see today. As I said already, we are going to talk about start, stop, and monitoring different processes, which is deployment manager, node agent, and application server. Deployment manager and node agent also server, actually. The only thing that we call it as DMGR and node agent, but it's nothing but application server process. We are also going to talk about a lot of command line tools available on 6.0 and 6.1. So you have to have a little bit understanding of WebSphere application server architecture. So it's kind of a new in 6.0 and 6.1. It's not like exactly the same structure like 5.0 and 5.1. Everything called as profile on 6.0 and 6.1. So you can have, if you have a better understanding about the WS instance on 5.0 and 5.1, it's very similar to that on 6.0. So all the profiles will be, you can have one binary and you can install more than one profile under that binary. And each profile will have only one cell as of now for 6.0 and 6.1. And one profile will have one cell, and one cell can have n number of nodes, and one node can have n number of servers. This is a basic architecture. I don't have a slide for it. I assume most of you will have those knowledge already. So assuming that, we are moving to slide 3. So we are going to talk about two parts. One is the start, stop, and monitoring the servers. We are also going to talk about the command line tools. So we can move on to slide 4. So these are the tools we are going to talk about. Profile management tool and tools to backup and restore configuration. It's kind of a very cool tool available in all the versions of WebSphere. But if you know how we can use those tools, you can better manage your system. So all these things will be useful for the administrators and also for the developers and also for the testers who are dealing with the WebSphere application server in day-to-day life. We are going to talk about the tools that will affect the nodes. For example, sync node, cleanup node, remove node, and a lot of other tools we are going to discuss about, and how we can debug and how we can effectively use those tools in WebSphere application server. We are going to talk about some utility tools, and we are also going to talk about some status tools and some miscellaneous tools available in the WebSphere application server. So we can move on to slide 5. And this is just a beginning session, so we can move on to slide 6. Okay. So everyone should be aware of, like, as I said about the architecture on 6.0.6.1, it's all profile-based. And profile will have a cell, and under cell you will have all the nodes, and nodes will have all the servers. So one thing you have to remember, there is a folder called config folder. It will be under the install root, which will be your WebSphere app server profile, your name of the profile, then slash config. That's one of the very important configuration file. So it will have all the configuration information of your system are stored in that folder, under the config folder. So there are three things you should know. One is the deployment manager, one is the standalone server, which is standalone application server, one is the embedded express. If you don't want any of the clustering, and if you want for just for a testing purpose, single JVM, then you can use standalone application server. if you want more than one service to be part of a cluster or you want a failover system, then you have to have a deployment manager. So on deployment manager, you can have multiple servers as part of a cluster, and you can have a failover and a lot of other features. It's not covered in this presentation, but I just want to give you a heads up of what are the different products available within the WebSphere application server. So one is the base application server, one is the deployment manager, another one is Embedded Express. Embedded Express will not be having any admin console, anything like that. It's just kind of a standalone JVM. So since we talked about it, so we are going to talk about how we can start the application servers on the base, and also how we are going to stop the application servers, and how we are going to do the same on the deployment manager, and how we are going to monitor those app server and the processes in the application server. So if you want to start a server in a standalone server, standalone base application server, you got to go to the profile home will be always your install root, which will be your WebSphere app server profile, profile name, slash bin. You go there and say start server, server name. The server will start. The server one server is a default server provided when you install the product with all the WebSphere application server versions. So if you want, you can create a new application server, but it's not kind of supported in base, but you can still, you will be able to create a new application server using WSAdmin. WSAdmin is other admin tool like your admin console, and you may be able to create more than one server in base application server, but you cannot administer those servers on the admin console because the admin console will be running on the server one server. So if you want to start a server on a base, just go to the profile home bin directory and say start server, server one. And if you want to start the server outside the profile folder, which will be your WebSphere app server bin directory, you can still, you will be able to start. All you have to say is start server space minus profile name and pass the name of the profile and then space the name of the server. So if you have more than one profile installed under the binary WebSphere app server, so you, if you want to start all your servers under the bin folder of the install root, you can say start server space minus profile name and then name of the server. If there is any issue when you start the server, and day-to-day life, definitely everyone will be experiencing a lot of problems starting the server. So the first thing you have to do is, if the server fails to start, go to the profile home, which will be your WebSphere app server profile name log profile name folder, and go to the name of the log folder slash log and slash the name of the server, which will be in this case server one, and then go inside the folder and look for a file called system.out.log file. The system.out.log file will have the information about your server during the startup. If you don't see anything in the system.out.log file, then check the startserver.log file. So the start server will have the information about all the your server startup, and you should see why the server failed to start in the start server or in the system.log file. And if you want to debug further, probably what you can do is you can say start server space server one and space minus trace. This will print a lot of information into the start server.log file, and you will be able to debug it. And if you don't see anything in the start server, and if you don't see anything in the system.out.log file, then most likely it's something to do with JVM level problem. So if you have put something in the generic JVM argument, or if you have, first thing that's what you have to do, just go to the, there's a file called server.xml file. It will be under your profile name, config, cell name, node name, server name. There's a file called server.xml file. If you open the file, you can go to the bottom of the file and you can see the JVM arguments and if there is anything weird in the class path or anything in the generic JVM argument. Most likely that will cause the problem actually. So you open the native STD error log file under the log folder of the server name, and if you see anything there, then open the server.xml file and see if it can be fixed. So these are the tips like you can see in the start server, and maybe you can also see if you are running the server as root user or non-root user. If you are running as a non-root user, make sure you have all the permission. And for any tools, actually, not only the server startup, actually, any tool within the bin folder that you are running, if you want to debug, just say the tool name, then space, minus trace. That will give you more information, actually, how we can debug the problem. And there are a couple of ways you can start the server. As you know, one is the command line, say start server, space server name, or you can do it from the Windows start menu, start program, web sphere, app server 6, and profile, profile name, start the server, or you can start the server from the Windows services. So we are going to talk about more about the Windows services in later slides, so we can move on to slide 7. So as we talked about the start server, so if you want to start the server outside the profile directory, you go to the WebSphere app server, bin folder, say start server, minus profile, profile name, and that will start the server. So when you start the server from the command line, it actually initiates two JVM. You should not be surprised. I'm just starting one JVM, why I'm seeing two JVM PID, right? So one PID is to launch the server. I mean, it will create a JVM environment to start the actual server. And once that PID has been done, once that initial JVM has been initialized, then that PID will be gone, and you will be having only one PID for the app server. So initially when you do a start server, you'll see two PIDs, and after a while, one PID will be gone, and you'll see only one PID. And it actually parses all the files when you do a start server, and it will read most of the information from your server.xml file, and it will start your web container, EGV container, namespace, everything. It will initialize, start, and once it is done, it will send a command back to the where you start the server. You can also start a server with, if you want to, if you don't want the two JVM process, and if you want to launch the script directly, what you can do is you can create your own script saying start server space minus script and pass the name of the script. If you don't pass the name of the script, by default it will be server 1 underscore script or something like that. And if you do that, and the bottom of the slide, you see the start server server 1 minus script launch server.sh. It means we are creating a launch script. So what it does, it will skip all the parsing of the XML file, and it will directly launch the JVM. So it will not have two PID. There will be only one PID, which is your direct JVM. So it will not create the initial JVM environment for you. And it reduces the start time by not passing the config files. And if the JVM settings are changed, you have to create a new launch script, because this launch script, when you create for the first time, it parses all the information of the XML and your JVM environment, everything, and it will put into that script itself. So you can directly say, instead of saying start server server 1, you can just say launch script.sh so that it will start the JVM. So we can move on to slide 8. So start server. Start server, it's the same like your start server, like you pass the profile name if it is outside the profile directory. But I would recommend not to do it, like, because you may forget the profile name or you may do something else. So it's always better to go to that profile name and start or stop the server. So it creates a new JVM to reconfiguration and send messages to server to shut down. So when you say start server, it sends a signal to the JVM to shut it down. So what it does, it stops the server, and it stops all the components first. I mean, it will start the transport chain, and then it will stop your container, and it will stop one by one. And then it will, if there is any request, pending request, it will have the quiet stop state, and it will allow the pending request to be completed, and then it will shut down all those information as well. And if it is a secured with the global security enabled, if you enable the global security, you may be able to start the server without passing the user ID and password, but you cannot stop the server without passing the user ID and password. So you should have the privilege to stop the application server. So what you have to do is stop server, space server name, space minus user, username, minus password, password to stop the server. If there is any issue to stop the server, again, you have to go to the system.log file, as I said already, under the logs / the server name folder, system.log file. If you don't see anything in there, then you can check something in the stopserver.log file. You may find something there. Usually, if it hangs, if it does not return anything, and if it hangs, this is applicable for both stop server and start server. If it, the system really hangs at the time, you can say kill minus 3 if it is a JVM, I mean if it is a Unix process. You can say kill minus 3 of the PID, and you can collect a couple of Java core files and see what is going on those PIDs. Sometimes what happens if, the, if there is any issue with the networking, or if there is issue with the host name, or anything like that, also the server may fail to stop. So the best way to start to debug is to check those log files to see if anything weird in the log files. And we can move on to slide 9. Now we talked about the base application server, how we can stop and start the app servers. Now we are going to talk about how we can manage those things in the application server deployment manager. So we can move on to slide 10. It's going to be exactly similar to how we've seen in the previous slides, but it's going to be a little different. Few things can be cannot be done on base and can be done on DBManager. So the start server, again, is going to be the same command, how we can start it. But if you want to start application server on in the federated environment, which is you have a DBManager and you have a node federated to a cell and you want to start the app server, from the command line, if you try to start, the app server is not going to start unless otherwise you start the node agent. So the node agent has to be running to start the app server. But there is a new property included in 5.1.1 onwards, which is called register server IOR with LSD, called register server IOR with LSD. And if you set that parameter in the node agent, you in the app server, JVM, you don't have to have the node agent running when you start the app server. So that's the only thing you may have to remember. If you want to really start an app server without starting the node agent, you can set the property in the app server JVM, and you may be able to start it. If you want more information about it, you can find that in the info center. Actually, you have to register. You have to search with register server IOR with LSD. And the app server can be stopped and start from the deployment manager console or from the WSAdmin. You cannot stop or start the server on the base admin console, because on the base admin console, as I said, the admin console is just running on one server, server one. And you won't have the option to stop or start the server from the admin console. But on Deployment Manager, you will be able to stop and start the app server. And you can also stop the node agent, but you cannot start the node agent from the DBManager admin console. What you have to do is you have to, you can restart, you can stop, but you cannot stop the node agent server. So when you talk about the node agent is nothing but a middleman between your DBManager and the app server. So whatever request the DBManager is sending to the app server and the app server to the DBManager, the status of the server, and when you deploy application, whatever you do, everything will go through the node agent. So DBManager is your master configuration, and you have a node agent in between, and you have the app server. So it's kind of a middleman between your DBManager and the app server. So let's move on to slide 11. So it's kind of the same what we have seen in the base, like stop server. If you are doing it outside the profile, just give minus profile, and you can stop the servers or start the servers from the console or from the WSAdmin. As I said, WSAdmin is another admin tool, so which can be used to administer the HTTP application server. So it's also another tool, actually, will be available under the bin folder. So you have to go to the bin, the WSAdmin minus help, it will list out all the help options. It's not covered in this presentation, as we have only 1 hour time to complete all this. So let's move on to slide 12. This is not much into this slide. I mean, you know how we can stop and start. If you want to start a manager, deployment manager, you can either say start manager, or you can say start server space minus DMGR, because DMGR is nothing but a server process. Like, same for the node agent, and same for that server. So for the D manager and node, you can say start manager, start node, stop node, actually. And as already I said, you can stop the node agent from the console, but you cannot start the node agent from the console. And you can also start and stop from the Windows services and also from the start menu. We can move on to slide 13. So now let's talk about how we can monitor these processes. I mean, how we can monitor the servers. Move on to slide 14. So we can monitor the server process by two ways, actually. One is from the OS level. If we are on Windows, you can have the Windows services, and you can create a service, and you can stop and start the server process from the Windows services. And this Windows services will be created when you create a profile for the first time for the app servers. And it will be created for the D manager as well. But if you create a new server, and if you want that server to be part of the service, there is a command called was service command. It's under the bin folder. You can use the was service minus add, and you can give the service name and space the whatever the server you want to add as part of the service. So you should remember, it should be act as you should have those privileges, the user rights, act as part of the operating system and log on as services. And you can configure to start manual or automatic, and you can set the recovery actions on the Windows services. And you have to remember a couple of things when you create the Windows services. As I said, when you create a profile for the very first time, the services will be created automatically. But if you have creating a server after the profile has been created, and if you want to monitor those servers, you use the was service command to create the service. But with the global security enabled, if you don't pass that argument on the was service, you have to say minus stop args, and you have to pass the username and the password. As I said already, you will not be able to stop the server without passing the user ID and password. So if you are doing it from the Windows services, all you need to do is, when you create the service for the first time, you say minus stop args space within the quotes user space username minus password. So those help, if you run the was service minus help, it will list out all the options. So you will be able to do that by yourself. And also, be careful when you give the service name. If you are giving a space, make sure you give within the quotes. There were some issue in the earlier releases, so most of the issues have been fixed, but a little careful when you give space in the service name. So we can move on to slide 15. So this, most of the things we already talked about. The was service command line tool can be used to create a Windows services. And this is a syntax, was service minus add. You can give the name of the service, and you can say the server name, and the path of the profile, and the remaining options. You may be able to remove, start, stop, and also you can see the status of the server from the was service command. For more information, probably you can check it in the info center, or if you want the help, probably go to the bin folder, say was service minus help. Let's move on to slide 16. So this is how we can monitor. The best way to monitor, actually, the app servers. In the deployment manager environment, the best way to monitor the app server is through the node agent, not through the Windows services. If you're, for some reason your app server crashed, or if it goes down by itself, or if it hangs, or if anything happens to your app server, the best way to monitor the server process is the node agent. because the node agent will have entire control over the app servers. So if you see on the same slide on the left-hand side corner, you see the maximum start atoms. So if it fails to start, it will try to start three times, actually. The node agent will try to start the app server three times. And it will, the ping interval, the 60 is by default. It will ping the app server every 60 seconds to check the status of the app server, if it is still live, alive, or if it is running. So the ping timeout, it will wait for 300 seconds to restart the app server. And the node restart state, there you can say stop, it won't do anything. If you say previous, it will bring the app server back to the previous state, what it was before. I mean, it was running or it was stopped or something. It will bring back to the previous state. And if you set the node restart state to running, the node agent will always try to start the app server when you start the node agent. So whenever you start the node agent, it will bring up all your app servers if you set the node restart state to running. So you can set this under the monitoring policy setting on the node agent. The path to it is given in the slide itself. So you can go to that page and you can set this monitoring policy. So you do not set automatic restart on the Windows services for the app servers. You can set it for the best way to do is set the auto restart for the node agent so that whenever you log in or reboot your system, the node agent will bring up automatically and app server will be started by the node agent so that there will not be any conflict. If you set both the app server and node agent to be started from the Windows services, so both will try to bring come up at the same time and the server will fail to start because the node agent has to be running when you start the app server. So it's better to keep the automatic restart to false for the app servers and set just for the node agent. And we can move on to slide 17. So we talked about the app servers and how we can monitor the server processes. Now we can discuss about the command line tools. We can move on to slide 18. So the command line tool also, it's better to run under the profile name bin folder so that you will not have any conflict with any other profile or anything like that. So all the command line tools are available under the bin folder. It's WebSphere app server profile name bin folder. If you go there, you will see a lot of command line tools there available in WebSphere application server. We can move on to slide 19. So this is one of the cool command line tools available on 60161. If you want to create a new profile, actually you can go to WebSphere app server bin profile management. If you want a GUI part, probably you can bring up the tool and you will be able to create a profile from there. Or you can use the command line tools like WASP profile on 60 and manage profile on 61. Both those tools are available under the bin folder. So you can create or you can delete, you can list all the profiles, all the stuff you can do using this profile tool. On 60 it's called WASP profile, on 61 it's called manage profile. And it's kind of a very big topic, so if you want to talk about it, it will take a lot of time. So if you need any help on those tools, probably all you need to do is go to the info center. It has got very good information about these tools, actually, WASP profile and manage profile tools. So we can move on to slide 20. Add node. This is one of the pretty good command line tools available on all the releases of the WebSphere application server, actually. So we talked about the deployment manager. We talked about base application server. You now install the deployment manager. You install the base application server. How you can make the base app server as part of your deployment manager. The only way to do it is using this command line tool called add node. This is to federate your standalone profile to the self, to the D-manager self, so that the node will be part of that self, D-manager self. So the D-manager will have all the master configuration files, which is your WebSphere app server profile, DMGF profile, and config folder will have all the master configuration of your node as well. So which node can be added to a 60 or 61 self? You cannot add 50 node to a 6.0 or to a 6.1. Cannot add a 6.0 node to 6.1. Only the 6.1 node can be added to 6.1 cell. If you really want the mixed cell environment, one way is possible. You have 6.0 cell and DM and the node. You can just migrate 6.1 cell, so that 6.1 cell will be on 6.1 and node will be on 6.0. That is supported configuration. But you will not be able to add a 6.0 node to a 6.1. That's not supported actually. And when you do add node with security enable, you will see a lot of problems. You will be really lucky if that works actually. So because the registry has to be same, the user has to be same, all the information for the security has to be same. If you see a lot of problem and if you really don't mind for just for that time alone, I would say it's better to disable the security on DMGR on the node, restart the server, and then say add node, dmanager host, dmanager port, and then you should be able to add the node to the cell. And you can also add the node from the dmanager admin console, but it's not a, it is possible, but it's not highly recommended to do that actually. So the best way to add a node is to use this command line tool called add node. So what you can pass the application. If you want the app running on the node to be included to the cell, then you have to say minus include apps. By default, it will not include any application on the node to your DM. And if you want any, if you do not want any port conflict for the node agent and all, you can say starting port, I want to create the node agent starting 15,000, port number 15,000 or 20,000 or whatever. And if you have any SIP, you can say include buses also, because that's not going to be included when you say add node. And if you want the Windows services to be registered when you add a node for the node agent, then you can pass the register service. Because when you say a node agent, what it does, it take all your configuration from your node, go to the DMGR, put all the information there, and then create a server called node agent, which is going to be your middleman between your DMGR and the app server. Create a process called node agent, and then start the node agent server. And then what it does, again, it will try to push or sync the information from your DMGR to your nodes. So that's what a lot of things the add node does under the cover. All we think is, okay, just push the file from here to the node, to the cell, right? But it does a lot of other things as well when you do the add node. And we can move on to slide 21. Okay, now we added the node to the DMGR. This is another pretty good tool available on the node level, actually. So you added a node to the DMGR cell. Now the node is part of the cell. And you can have n number of nodes as part of the cell. So it doesn't have to be on a same machine. It can be on separate machine. It's all kind of your network. If you have 10 machines, you can have 10 nodes on 10 machines. And on DManager, you can federate all the 10 nodes to the DMGR. And you can create a cluster and have part of everything. Now everything works fine. And now you want to remove a node from that cell. You don't want that node anymore, or you are removing that entire box from your network or from the DManager cell. So the very best thing first to do is to do a remove node. The remove node, again, this command line utility tools are available under the bin folder. You have to go to that node, WebSphere app server, profile, that node profile name slash bin, go there and say, you don't have to pass any argument for the remove node as we do it for add node. Just say remove node. Only thing is your DManager has to be running so that it can connect to the DManager and then try to, what it does, it removes the node on the DManager so that the node agent, the DManager will remove all the information about that node on the DManager config. And it, on the node side, it takes the backup from, there is a folder called WebSphere App Server Profile Name Config Backup Folder. When you do an add node, it takes the original configuration of the node, zip it, and put it under the backup folder on the node side. So that when you say remove node, it just takes that backup zip file and unzip it on the node. so that whatever information you had before will be lost. You are going to get the original configuration before you added the node to the cell. So when you say remove node, you will get your original configuration back. On the DM side, all the information will be removed, except the application. So whatever application you deployed or included when you added the node, those applications are going to be available on the DMGR. It will not be removed by the remove node command. You can go to the console and you can say map this application to any of the node or servers. So any of the cluster or servers, I'm sorry. Suppose if you have an issue to remove the node, the best way to do is, there is a command line tool available on the DM called cleanup node. For example, you removed a machine itself out of your network. The machine itself is not available and you cannot plug it back and do a remove node. So what you can do, or the remove node itself fails for network issue or for some other reason and you really don't want the node to be part of the cell. What you can do is you can go to the D manager bin folder and say cleanup node space node name, which name you want to clean it up. What it does, it just wipes out the node information from the cell. So it removes everything from that DMGR. So DMGR will not be knowing anything about the cell. And what you can do is you can come back to the node, and if you don't want, because you already cleaned the node from the DMGR cell, so all you need to do is you have to come to the base bin directory and say remove node minus force. What it does, it won't look for DMANAGER information. It won't try to clean up everything on the DMANAGER cell. All it does is wipe out everything on the node side and get the backup file and then unzip it on this node. You may see some exception when you run the remove node with minus force option, but you can ignore all those exceptions. All you have to see is the last line. Okay, it's successful. That's all you have to see. So if you say remove on minus force, it removes everything. It won't remove everything on your DM side, actually. So for that, you have a tool called cleanup node, which can be used to clean up the node on the DM side. Now we can move on to slide 22. And sync node, if your node is working fine, your DM is fine, you have a lot of nodes and everything is fine, and whenever you make a configuration change on the DMGR cell, and the changes are going to be stored on the DMANAGER config folder. So all the configuration, let's call your master configuration deployment manager. So that will be on the WebSphere app server profile, DMGR profile, config folder. I've been repeating the same thing for a lot of time because I want everyone to really understand the importance of that folder. So that config folder is going to have a lot of all your configuration information. So that will be pushed to your node to the same location under the node as well. You'll have a config folder. So the DM will have the master configuration. And if the sync is not working, if you see the status in the console as not running or unknown status or some discovery issue on the console, you couldn't start the server because the status is not right, and any of the information, or if you're out of sync, if you're on the node agent link, you are seeing the not synchronized status or whatever. So what you can do is, the best thing is to stop the DMANAGER. There is a folder called WSTEM. It's for the workspace. You will see that in WebSphere, app server, profile name, WSTEM. You can stop the DMANAGER, remove everything under the WSTEM folder. And there is another folder called temp folder, which will be under WebSphere, app server, profile, DMGR profile, config/temp. So that temp will be used during the synchronization process. If the sync failed before any time, all the files are going to be stored there. So it may be too huge, and the sync may fail for so many reasons because of that. So you can remove everything under the config temp as well. But you have to start the DMANAGER before removing the WSTEM as well as the temp. Then start the DMANAGER, go to the bin folder of the app server node and say sync node, DMANAGER hostname, DMANAGER port. And if it's security enabled, you have to pass the username, password. And if there is any issue with that, you can always say minus trace, and that will create a file called syncnode.log file that will be under your nodes level log/syncnode.log. So you can open that file and you can debug further. So it's a pretty good tool available for a lot of sync issues. This tool will be used to, and then you can go start the, and one more thing, you cannot start the sync node when the node agent is running. So you have to start the node agent to start the, to run the sync node command actually. And we can move on to slide 23. So backup config, restore config. We can talk about this tool even for a day. I mean, it may be a very simple tool, but it does a lot of things, actually. This is one of my favorite tools, actually, in this version. When you can run this tool, what it does, actually, it zips the entire config folder on the D-manager. If it is on the Federated environment, always run it on the D-manager to zip the entire master configuration. So you can say backup config space file name if you want to create your own file name, or if you do not want to pass a file name, that's fine. By default, it will create and place it under the, I think it's under the bin folder. It will put the copy of the zip file, actually, configuration, backup configuration. This, by default, it will try to stop the server. What you can do is backup config space minus no stop. If you say, the D manager will not be stopped actually, and you can get the configuration. When can you run this backup config? Whenever you are making a big configuration changes, before you deploying a large thing on your production system, or you are going to make big config change on your production system, it's always better to take the backup config. And maybe on the weekly basis or monthly basis, but if before making any major changes on your production system, it's always better to run this tool or take the entire config folder, back it up before you do any major changes. Because if any corruption happens, your environment is not going to be in a good shape. I mean, you will not be able to start any of the servers. Your entire production system is going to be down for a while. I mean, until we figure out which files are corrupted. So if you have this backup config, all you have to do is go to the bin folder, say restore config, paste the name of the backup file name so that it will be backed to your original working configuration. And then do a sync node, everything fine, actually. So it's kind of one of the important tools to run before any major changes. And this tool also can be used for other purposes. For example, you have a test system or you have a deployment system, and you have one cell and three nodes, everything working fine, and you want to take the entire configuration from this deployment system to your production system. And you don't want to install and configure, deploy, all those things. You don't want to do it, right? So the best way is you can run a backup config on this deployment system and take the zip file, go to the production system, and I'm assuming on your production system also you have the same cell name, node name, all the information actually when you install for the fresh on the deployment manager, because you have to install the profile. I mean, you have to install the binaries and add those nodes. It's a fresh configuration. What you're going to do is you are taking the backup config on the test system or your deployment system where all the configurations are configured already. Run a backup, go to the DM buff, and then say restore config. So all the configuration on your test system or your deployment systems are now on your production system. And if you want to rename the node or cell or port or host name or any information, if you want to rename, you may be able to do it using there are a couple of tools available. One is best practice for configuration changes. That's a tech note available in the our support site. It's 7007419. It's 7007419. If you search with the information, that will have all the information how you can change those things. And if you don't want to use it, you can go to the developer works, which is www.ibm.com/developerswatch, and you can search with sample script in the developer work. It will give you the scripts, Jekyll script and Jython script. You can use those script to change your, rename the node or rename your host name or cell name, everything. So check a backup on your working system, put it there, and make all those changes and do a sync node. It should work fine. as I said, it's kind of a pretty cool, good tool to do all those things, actually. So that's the only supported way of moving the configuration from one system to other system. You cannot just check the entire binary or entire zip the entire thing and go to another system. That's not supported. It may work, but it's not supported. So we can move on to slide 24. Okay, this is console-level command line tool. As you know, on 5051, it's very easy to uninstall and reinstall the admin console. All you have to do is, it's kind of any other application on 5051, any other ER file. But starting 6161, it's a little different. It's all based on the ISE. It's a integrated solution console. You will not be able to uninstall or uninstall the admin console on WebSphere application server 6.0 because there is no feature available on 6.0. If anything corrupted, you may have to open your PMR and we have to find out what are the files corrupted or why the admin console is not working properly. But on 6.1, if you see any issues like error 500 or page blank or white pages or anything like that on the admin console, you know that you did something or something corrupted on the file. So all you have to do is, there is a tool, command line tool called ISE deploy based minus restore. What it does, it restores back to the original configuration, so you will get back the working console again. So that's a pretty good tool in 6.1, actually. As I said, it's not available on 6.0. And the best way on 6.0 is, if you want to do that, if you have a two system, for example, AX5.1 and WebSphere version 6.0.2.21, and another system also the same, AX5.1 and WebSphere application 6.0.21, right? And on one system, the admin console is corrupted. You know you're not getting the page right or something wrong on the console, not displaying it right. So what you can do is, from the working system, you can zip the entire adminconsole.er file. It's all system apps on 6.0 and 6.1. It's not part of the ER file. You will see that under the WebSphere App Server System Apps folder, you can copy it, zip the entire adminconsole.er file, come to the non-working system, and then just overwrite all the files or remove it and place it there. And you make sure you stop the server and make sure you take a backup of the same entire system apps and in your configuration folder. It's not a recommended way of doing it, but if you have no other option other than that, yeah, you can do it. But you better to open a PMR and work with us, and we can probably find out if there is any other solution other than this. It's just tips for you to back it up immediately. And on 6.1, you can also use some JSON scripts available under the bin folder. You can see deploy console, or if you want to install, connect to WSAdmin, space deploy console, then install or uninstall. You can do. And we can move on to slide 25. So these are the many other tools. Maybe you might have worked on those tools in day-to-day life. If you want to play with ANT, if you have an ANT script and you want to deploy application or you want to build something, you cannot use the ANT. That's not supported in WebSphere application server. You have to use WebSphere ANT, which is WS_ANT. This tool is available under the bin folder of WebSphere application server. So you have to run WS_ANT space build. It is going to do exactly what the ANT is supposed to do. Only thing is, since it's kind of a WebSphere customized ANT tool, actually, so you have to use this tool. And IKEMAN, it's kind of a pretty good tool for to extract or import a certificate or delete a certificate or anything you want to do on WebSphere. On 6.1, you may be able to do all this information, all this stuff in the console itself. It's so robust and it has got a lot of information. So if you want to play around anything with your SSL, data changes, signer or personal certificate, anything, all you have to do is go to the admin console. On the left-hand side is the security, and you will have SSL configuration. Click on that link, and you will see all the information there. You should be able to do import, export, all the things you should be, or pull the certificate from some other host machine, and a lot of other things you can do. But on 6.0, it's not available. That's only way you can exchange the certificate, and only supported tool is your IKEMAN to exchange those certificates and add, remove, and all those stuff. And all certificate by default, the password is going to be WebAS, W-E-B-A-S. That's the certificates, and all the certificates will be available under your ETC folder. That's your app server ETC folder. You will see all the certificates there. And this is a tool, EJB deploy tool. You can deploy your EJBs from the console when you deploy the application. But what happens, like, it takes a lot of time, and if it fails, suppose if you deploy an application and you select the EJB deploy, you go all the way, last page, click finish, and your deployment fails. And you don't know what fails. And this is very good, like, you can go to the command line, EJB deploy, pass the DFR, and see if the deploy works fine, and also to get all your deployment classes for your EJBs, you can use this EJB deploy tool. And it can be also used when you deploy the application, but if you want to consume some time, probably you can use this EJB deploy, and then you can debug if there is an issue with the deploy of your EJB. And gen plugin config. If you want to regenerate the plugin file, you can do it from the console and also from the WSAdmin. But if you do it from the console, that's going to be on your cell level. Your entire plugin going to be generated from the cell level. But if you want to generate the plugin just for one node or just for one server, then you can use this gen plugin CFG tool. You can also use to generate the entire cell. I mean, gen plugin CFG, you can say which level you want to generate the plugin for. If you don't pass anything, by default, it will generate for your entire cell, actually. But well, problem is, if you do it from the command line, you still may have to go to the console to propagate the plugin to all other nodes, actually. And, yeah, so we can move on to page 26. And if you want to check the status of the server, if it is running or stopped or anything like that, you can use this tool called server status. You can say server status space minus the server name, and that will show you the information about the server. If you say minus all, it will give you the information about all servers if it is running or stopped. It will go and check all that server status and return the status for you. And if the security enabled, you have to pass minus user, username, minus password, password. So a couple of things you have to remember in the parameters. One is the minus user or minus username, then username, minus password, password, and also the minus trace if there is any issue. Because this is common for most of the commands available in the security server. So if you want to know the version info, what version you are running on, there is a tool called version info tool. All you need to do is go to the bin folder and run version info. It will give you the JDK version. It will give you the WebSphere version, all the information. All these informations actually are stored in the WebSphere app server properties and version folder. You will see some of the files called the base.product and the nd.product. So those files will have the information about this. If you want to generate an HTML format, you can run the gen history, like what are the things applied or what are the APARs applied, all the information. If you want to know, you can run these tools to generate in the HTML format. You can move on to slide 27. We are almost at the end. Okay, this IVT tool, this tool, usually you don't have to run after you install the product after a month or so. It's used after you install the product. You want to know if the installation was successful, and you want to know if everything went fine during the installation. So all you need to do is run this tool, IVT, and you can also run specifically for that profile and then on this port. Or even the first step after you install the product, on the first step, it will show what are the things you can do. There also this IVT is listed. You just click on it, and what it does, it checks all the files and makes sure everything went fine during the install, and also it will start the default server, server 1, when you run this IVT, actually. And profile password encoder. This is also a pretty good tool because We talked about a lot of tools, and I said, like, you have to pass minus user, username, minus password, password for all the tools, or most of the tools, actually. If you do not want to pass it from the command line, and you don't want someone to see when you type those information in the command line, right, what you can do is you can put that username and password in soapclient.props file. So that property files will be under your profile name, properties folder, and it's called soap.client.props. If you open that, you will see something called user ID, password, and you can put that user ID and password there, and you don't have to then save the file, and you don't have to pass for any tool. It will pick it up from the soap.client.props file. And again, what happens to the password in that property file? It's not going to be encrypted. It's going to be plain text password, which you don't want, right? So what you can do is you can use this prop file password encoder tool to encrypt the password, whatever you have in that SOAP client props file. It's not only for that file, any file, SAS client props file, for the RMI stuff, if you want to put the user ID and password, you can do that, and you can encrypt those passwords in the property files or in any file. So this is a pretty good tool. All you need to do is you have to pass the file name, and also you need to give whatever it is. I think it's called com.ibm.something.login user ID or something. So you pass it, then whatever against that value, it will get encrypted, and you no one can read the password. So it's a pretty good tool. Now we can move on to slide 29. So collector tool, it collects all the information from your system. Whenever you work with the IBM support team, when you open a PMR, probably I've seen a lot of customers get frustrated, like, why do I have to run all the information, right? But it's very pretty good tool for us to, because we get all your logs information, all your configuration information, and some of the system information as well, so that it will be easier for us to analyze the problem and to find out the root cause of the problem. So you have to run this tool as a root user, and you cannot run the collector. This is the only tool which you cannot run under the bin folder. You cannot just go to the profile name bin folder and say collector. It's not going to run. It's not going to collect the zip file or the jar file. You have to go outside the folder, somewhere in the temp or somewhere, and then you have to run it as a root user so that it will collect all the information. And another thing is the JSP batch compiler. So if you want to compile all your JSP outside the web sphere to see all the JSPs are compiled, you can say for an AR or a VAR model or a single JSP, you can compile it for your testing purpose. And when you install the product also, when you install the application, you can select the JSP compilation. But before you do that, you can run this to make sure all your JSPs are fine and it can compile. So the last tool is the AR expander tool. And if there is any issue, you deploy application and it installs everything fine, looks fine, but it's not getting expanded under the installed apps folder and you want it right away. So what you can do, use this ER expander tool, pass the ER name and whatever the operation directory which is going to be installed apps. So the applications are going to be expanded under the installed apps. So you can start the application and someone can use the application. If you don't do it, that's one of the pretty good use of it. You can say you can expand it, also you can collapse it actually. So it's kind of a pretty good tool when you have some issues when you deploy or something, or you want to see what is inside the ER file, you can just expand it and see what's all in the ER file. So it's a very good tool actually. So we can move on to the last slide, I believe. I think it's going to be the end of the presentation. Yeah, so I wanted to tell a lot of other tips and information, and I had to rush also to complete all this slides. So if you have any questions, please ask me so that I can try to answer the questions. Elijah, probably you can take over the presentation.
Thank you, Kumar, for a great presentation.
We do have a question from Laura Guzzelli.
I have two questions, actually. I'm running WebSphere 6.0, and I have a question about the backup config and if that is available in AIX, because I thought there was an issue with preserving permissions. That's my first question. And the second one is about the Gen plugin config And if you could tell again when it applies to the cell as opposed to just the node.
Yeah, so the backup config tool is available on all the operating systems, not just on Windows or anywhere. It's for all the OS, and you should be able to run the tool. There should not be any issue with if you're running as non-root user, then, yeah, if your start server can work, then your backup config should also work. I mean, that's all it needs of permission. You don't have to have any extra permission to run the backup config. So as long as other tools can run under the bin folder, you should be able to use that backup config on all the operating systems. So when we talk about the question two, usually you don't really have to run on node level or server level. Now, suppose if you have 10 developers and you don't want to give access to all the application configuration or the plugin, right? So you can just go to on the server level, whatever application deployed on the server level, you can generate the plugin configuration and you can give them the plugin.xml file so that they can access only that application. It just for your own choice, like if you want, you can use those features, but mostly people will just run it on the cell level itself, actually. It's not really a requirement. Hope that answers your question.
Yes, thank you.
Hear from Tomas Muzlus.
Hello. I have a question about the encryption of the passwords. During the presentation, you mentioned that you can encrypt the passwords. My understanding was that they were only encoded, not encrypted, with that security. Am I missing something, or can they actually be encrypted?
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I meant to say the encoded, actually, not the encrypted. So you're right, actually. So the password will be encoded, actually, so that someone can read the password.
Well, pity, because we were hoping for encryption at some point. And the second question, when you were talking about stopping the app server, from my experience, at least in the past, using the kill command on the Unix server usually worked the best, and the app server was able to stop gracefully. Is there any issue with using the kill command from the Unix versus doing it for console or using the IBM scripts?
As of I know, I never seen any problem, actually. It should work. There should not be any problem with that. But probably if there is any issue, we may have to really see those scripts and see what it's really doing, actually. So as in, many people are using those kind of things to stop it, actually. So as I never seen much issues with those.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
We'll now hear from Ashok Padmanabhash.
Whatever this backup configuration that you spoke about, is this a condition that if I wanted to export that backup configuration to a different machine, as I said, like from production to test or vice versa, is before running the restore, that backup configuration zip file, do I have any mandatory that exact cell and node configuration should be there in the other side also?
Yeah, actually, you may be able to manually work around it, because if you have two nodes and one DM, probably it would be better to have the same setup on your other system as well, so that you can, when you export it, I mean, if you back it up from this machine and put it on that machine and say restore config, because when you say restore config on the DManager config folder, you are going to see the three nodes or the two nodes.
Right.
But if you have five or six nodes federated to the cell, all the information are going to be lost. You are overriding all.
Let me take it. Let me say, like, I have only a base deployment manager, and then I take the config folder where there is, like, under that original master deployment manager where it is, like, five nodes. So can I copy it so that it creates at the deployment manager level five nodes? Maybe I may use all the nodes or not, but at least at the deployment manager level, it should not configure those automatically five nodes.
It will. The deployment manager will think that you have five nodes, but actually you do not have the five nodes. Then
until I synchronize the node, it will not know the real information about the other nodes, right?
Yeah, DManager will always think, because the configuration you already exported here, I mean, it's imported here, so the DManager will think it has five nodes.
Yeah, so it means until I sync, I run the sync node, it should work. And when I run the sync node, it will have a problem, because maybe that's the time where it looks for the respective nodes. But as such, initially I can load the export the, at the cell level, those backup file configuration and restore it, and then change the cell name. And then if I want to have, then I can work on it, right?
Exactly. You can do it. And also, if you do not want a couple of nodes, you can say
just remove it. Right? Yeah, that's what.
You can run a cleanup node to clean it
up. Okay. The respective nodes. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So this is work only in 6.1 or in the down version? Like
oh, still any version it will work, but when you are doing this, you have to be very, very careful because we are playing around with all the
components. Yeah. Basically, I'll take a backup because wherever I'm going to export it, before running this stuff, I'll take the original backup and then I can run it.
But if you're on 6.1, if it's just for a base app server, you can use the export server, export profile, wsubmin commands. Those commands are only available for the base, not for DMGR. So you can export entire server or you can export entire profile using the wsubmin tool.
Okay, there's one more thing. Like if this restore backup manager is at both at the, I mean, I'm still, we are at 6.1, we're still at the 5.7 version. And it's both at the app server level and at the cell level. Why do we need to take at the app server level? Can we not take only at the cell level and then whenever we want, we can sync it so that it gets synced with the app server level also?
Exactly. There is no need to run a backup config on the node level. As long as you have the master configuration,
I can understand.
You don't have to worry about the installed apps. You have a .er file under the config cell name application folder. So you can use the ER expander to expand the file. So you really don't need even the installed apps. You don't need anything except, if you ask me, I would say only the configuration folder is the key.
Right.
All other files, you can get it from any other working system.
Yeah, that's what I... Yeah, thank you very much.
No problem.
Thank you. We'll now hear from Adish Fule.
Hi. I have two questions. The first is, and we briefly talked about this, is the sync node, the full synchronize feature. Does my node need to have the configurations for sync node to work, or could effectively my config folder be empty totally, and then when I do a full synchronize from the DMGR, since it's the master repository, would it create the all the configuration structure and, you know, the folder structure at my node?
No, it's not going to work. Because if you have lost all the information under your config folder on the node, which means you lost everything onto the node. So the sync node, even if you run a command line sync node, it will look for the host name and all the information on the node level server.xml file. It's not going to even connect to the DManager before reading this file. It will try to read a lot of information on your node level. So it's going to fail. And you cannot start the node agent if you lost your file. So you cannot do it from the DMGR because sync is going to fail from the DMGR as well. The only option is copy the entire folder from the DMGR, config folder. Put it on your node and remove all the unwanted files. That's the best way to do it, to recover the files.
Is there some utility which will help me do that?
No. The node? Manual. Only way is manual because it's not meant to do it. I mean, it's not, you mean you lost your configuration, it's corrupted, or you deleted by, unfortunately, or for some reason, right?
The typical scenario there is that, say, I had my node on a separate server and I lost the server, you know, the hardware, some issue. So I get a new server machine and I want to just rebuild that node. So I just throw the app server binaries in there and I create a dummy profile for the node or something. So I'm looking at an easy way of
If you are doing that, then sync node will work. As long as on a new machine, you create with the same cell name, same node name, same configuration.
Yeah.
Three things should be same. The cell name of your DMGR should be same here as well on your new node. And the node name on the existing node has to be same now. And the machine name, host name, whatever you have given should be same. If all these three things are same, then you can run the sync node. Sync node would work. Because it thinks, oh, I know about your node already. Maybe there may be some issue with the epoch values, but it's still, the sync node should work. It should override everything and it should work.
Yeah. And the other question is that if I'm using wsadmin to remotely connect to a different DMGR, you know, by passing the host name and the ports and the correct credentials, and if global security is enabled on all of them, I get this prompt for the username password. I've been having some problem with this. Say if I don't want wsadmin to prompt, what's the way to do it?
there is a property in the soap.client.props file where you can say prompt or command line or something. Actually, two or three things you can do, actually. You can open the soap.client.props file, and you can set it up, actually, what you want to do there.
Yes,
and
I've been able to set up the soap for the existing, for the same deployment manager that the WS admin exists on.
Mm-hmm.
But if I want to remotely connect to a different DMG, you know, different deployment manager, then do I need to create multiple copies of the SOAP client props?
If you connect from remote box, the WS admin, that may be your Embedded Express or your base install or some other DMG, right?
Right.
There also you will have a SOAP client.props file, and there will also you have the EDC folder and the information. That from there only this client piece is going to read all the information. So you may have to modify it on that machine, on the local client machine, not on the server side.
No, but, okay, let me say this again. I have a deployment manager on server A, and I'm trying to connect to the deployment manager on server B. Right, so I instantiate my AWS admin on server A, and I pass the correct host name and the port so that
mm-hmm.
I can remotely connect to the deployment manager on server B.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I pass credentials to the AWS admin session on server A so that it connects, it doesn't prompt me for a password?
Yeah, that's what you have to. On server A is your client now. Server B is your server.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So server A is going to be your client, and whatever the information you can on the server A, you don't want to pass in the command line, right? Minus user, username, minus password, password.
Correct. Yeah.
At the same time, you don't want to get the prompt as well.
Right.
So on that client machine on server A, did you put the user ID and password in the soap.client.props file?
Yes, I did.
But it's still asking for the user ID and password?
No, it works for one session, but then I want to connect to a deployment manager on server C, say, so which has different set of credentials, a different username password.
You have to either pass it or you have to, there is no way I don't think you can control it, actually, because you have to pass it. The property is going to for your entire environment. You cannot create more than one property file because it's kind of a hard code and inside the code.
Oh, so there's no way to, like, pass a new SOAP client prop to the AWS?
I think you can modify something on the script itself to load other property files.
Okay.
But it may take some time, actually. We have to really find out. Probably you can open a PMR and we can work on it, actually. I think you can try, but it's going to take some time, actually. I don't have it on top of my head.
All right. Thank you. That's all.
Okay, thanks.
I hear from Ajit Doki.
Yeah, I have got a couple of questions. As I understand from this discussions, like one profile can have multiple application server instances. And what I understand is at a single point of time, we can start only one server. So is that be possible to start all the JVMs or all the application servers if it's a clustering environment under a single profile?
As long as your machine is capable of doing it, even you can run 100 servers at the same time under the same profile. No issues.
Okay. And the other question is, because by default, the SOAP timeout is setting to the 180 seconds. So if I increase the SOAP timeout, is there any impact on the configuration or deployment manager or an application?
No, not at all. The SOAP client timeout is only for the client, like if you run a sync node or if you run some other client tools that on the command line, right? Those are the only information that's going to be affected or will not timeout until that time. For example, if you do add node, if it takes more than 3 minutes, then maybe it may timeout. So if you have 600 minutes, seconds, then 10 minutes it won't timeout. So you will not see any other performance impact there.
Okay, that's all.
Yeah, thanks.
Now move on to Balanandeepini.
Hey, this is Balanandeepini. I'm looking for a command which can give me at the server level or the node level or the manager level for performance parameters. Isn't there a report or any command I can run which will give me a summary of performance parameters at the various levels?
What do you mean with performance parameters? I mean, you're looking for something like PMI or something?
No. I'm looking like what threads, timings, settings, or it could be a spool settings, anything. Or the thread settings, anything in a snapshot can I get at any command level or any command I can give which can give me the report?
No, as of I know, there is no tools which can give you a snapshot of all those information. Only thing is dump name space may dump the namespace information, but there is no other tool I can think of, actually, from the command line.
Okay, the only reason is that suppose I have got 3-4 boxes or 6 boxes, I need to generate a report to make sure my performance parameters are same across the boxes. I was looking if I can get a report from the individual box to compare. So that's of such kind. So you feel that right now there's nothing such tool, right?
No, not that I am aware of, at least. So I never seen any tool like that.
Okay, thanks. That's all I have.
Okay, thanks.
I'll move on to David Manda.
Hi, I have a question about the backup config. And the question I have is, when you run the backup config, it generates those big files. So is there a auto management or something like that to wipe out or set a timeline of, like, you want to remove, if you are running this tool on every day or every week basis, you want to keep like 5 or 10 copies of it and then get rid of the other one. Otherwise, it will keep building up if we have put it in the scheduler and have it run weekly or monthly.
No, you cannot do it, because after you run the backup config, its WebSphere does not have any control over that file. You can put it anywhere, actually, not just on the bin folder. You can put it in a temp folder or anywhere. You can create a number of files. There is no way WebSphere can look those files, find the information, like every day or week, and wipe it off. No, it cannot do it, actually.
You know,
one thing is, maybe you can put it in the FFBC folder or somewhere, which will be cleaned every week automatically, all the files. I mean, 1 week, 1 month old or 1 week file. But even I'm not sure how that's going to work with the backup config, but that you have to manually remove that.
Okay, so there's no auto file management or backup management from...
There's no way WebSphere can control after the tool has been run. I mean, it's on the OS, that's it.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
No further questions at this time.
At this time, we conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Kamari, for presenting today.
Thanks.